We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, I'm Robin.
And I'm Chris. Together we're the Gen X couple.
Hey, guys.
Take two, technical fault.
Yeah, I don't even know how. The microphone was muted and we were recording for like a whole minute before I even noticed that nothing was recording. Happy New Year to
yes.
you guys.
Happy New Year.
This is Saturday. This is actually January 3rd. We're recording super close to the release day, which will be next week for the first time in a long time. But we're actually recording for the entire month of January today, so this is just a one-time treat. Hopefully
yes.
we'll get caught up on February ahead of time. I just like to have them done and scheduled. That way we don't have to worry about it, especially, you know, if we end up doing a last-minute trip to Disney or something, which we're doing in January. You know, you just never know. But anyway, so today we're going to talk about William H. Mumler, who is the man who claimed to photograph the dead. And before we even really get into his name, I want to set expectations for this episode, because this is not one of those neat and tidy stories where you're going to walk away saying, oh, that was obviously fake, or wow, ghosts are real, end of discussion. The story lives in that gray area, and the reason it lives in the gray area is because it's wrapped in grief, new technology at the time, and it was a time in American history where people were desperate for any reassurance that death wasn't the end. So when you hear William Mumler's story out of context, it kind of sounds ridiculous. But when you place him exactly where he belongs, which was the mid-1800s in America, it's suddenly disturbingly plausible. And that's what makes this episode uncomfortable, but in the best way.
Yeah, and I think that's why this topic sticks with people once they hear about it. Because it's not just about whether William Mumler was a fraud or a visionary. It's about how easily humans can be influenced when emotion meets technology. They don't understand. Photography back then wasn't just new, it was borderline mystical. People genuinely didn't understand how an image could exist without paint or a human hand. So when Mumler comes along and says, sometimes the camera captures more than the eye can see, that idea didn't feel that crazy. It felt possible. And when you layer that on the top of the massive death following the Civil War, you got a population that's primed to believe.
Yeah, true. So to really understand Mumler, we need to slow down and talk about what America looked like before he ever even picked up a camera. This is a time when death was personal. People died at home. Families prepared bodies themselves. And children grew up around mourning rituals, and that's M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, not the A-M. Death wasn't hidden away in hospitals yet. It was part of daily life back then. So when spiritualism starts gaining traction, it doesn't feel fringe. It feels like a continuation of something people already sort of believed, that the dead weren't completely gone. Seances weren't considered spooky. They were social events back then. Respectable people attended them. Newspapers covered them, and they covered them in all seriousness. So Mumler didn't invent belief in ghosts. He just found a way to give that belief a physical image.
And the Civil War really cannot be overstated here. This wasn't just a war. It was an industrial scale trauma. People lost sons, husbands, brothers, fathers, and in many cases, they never got the bodies back. No grave, no confirmation. Just silence. Imagine living with that uncertainty.
No, I cannot.
And then being told there's a man who can photograph your loved one standing right beside you. Not talking, not haunting, just present. That's incredibly powerful. And honestly, Even knowing everything we now know, I can still understand why people wanted it to be true.
Yeah, I would have been the first one in line. Seriously. But let's talk about William H. Mumler as a person. Because he wasn't some carnival barker right out of the gate. He starts as a jewelry engraver, which tells us a lot about him. He's someone that works with fine detail, who understands materials, and has patience. He's not a flashy guy, he's methodical. And when he gets into photography, it's almost accidental. Photography itself was a technical skill, not an art form yet. So Mumler learning it wasn't strange, but what happens next absolutely is.
And this is where things get interesting to me, because Mumler claims his first spirit photography was a complete accident.
Photograph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He takes a self-portrait, develops the plate, and sees a second figure behind him. He identifies it as his cousin who had died years earlier. Now, skeptics will immediately say double exposure, and they're probably right. But here's the thing. Mumler doesn't initially rush out to monetize this. Word spreads organically. People start asking him questions. And once people want something from you, that's when intent starts to matter. Did he believe his own story at first, or did he recognize an opportunity almost immediately? The question never really gets answered.
Right. And once Mumler realizes that people are willing to pay for these photographs, everything changes. He set up a studio, and actually, I don't know if I put this in the notes later, but that studio was actually in Boston.
Yes.
It's a falafel restaurant now, and you've been in there.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite lunchtime places to go. I've never seen a ghost there, but the falafels are spiritual.
I don't know about that. They're not that good. But yeah, it's right in Downtown Crossing. Is that Washington Street? I don't even know what street, but it's like right in Downtown Crossing.
Yeah,
we actually just found out about this ourselves a couple of years ago on a ghost tour. I had no idea this even happened in Boston. I think I had heard about it, but yeah, we just found out the location a couple of years ago on one of the Boston ghost tours. But anyway, so he realizes people are willing to pay for these types of photographs, and he sets up a studio. So he gets clients coming in, and they're already emotionally vulnerable. And this is important. He doesn't ask them who they want to see. He doesn't give them any prompts. The spirit just appears after the fact. And it's a very calculated choice because that gives the illusion of authenticity. If you don't know what's coming, the more likely you are to believe it. And once a grieving mother sees what she believes is her dead child standing beside her, logic is gone. It's completely over.
And what really gets me is how consistent these photos are. The spirits are always slightly out of focus, slightly translucent, never fully formed, which at the time felt convincing, but now it reads like someone who understands photography limitations.
Photographic
limitations very well. And Mumler controlled the entire process. Clients never saw the plates, never watched the development of the film. Everything happened behind closed doors. And that alone would raise red flags today. But back then, it was just how photography worked. You trusted the photographer.
Yeah, exactly. So let's really sit with what these images looked like, because descriptions don't do them justice. Google them. They're on Google Images. You'll find them in 2 seconds. But the living subject is crisp. The person is centered. They're solid. The spirit is almost delicate. Like, it could disappear if you stared at it too hard. Sometimes the spirit is smiling, sometimes their facial expression is neutral, sometimes they're solemn. But what's consistent is the placement. They're always close, connected. There's sometimes a hand on the shoulder or an arm hovering protectively. They're not random background shapes. They're emotionally intentional compositions.
And that's why I struggle with the idea that Mumler wasn't just playing around.
Was just playing around.
These images were designed to evoke comfort. They weren't scary. They weren't monstrous. They weren't reassuring. And that makes the ethical questions harder. Because if someone walks away from the studio feeling peace they didn't have before, does the intent matter or does the method matter more? That's something people argued about then. And honestly, we're still arguing about it now.
Yeah, seriously, because I think I would be happy with that, whether it was fake or not. I think it would help put my mind at ease. But anyway, eventually people started noticing problems. Spirits were repeating. Faces, the same faces, were appearing in multiple photos under different names. And that's when skepticism really gained some traction, because grief might blind you once, but patterns don't lie forever. Other photographers began openly criticizing Mumler, explaining how double exposures work and demonstrating how easily these effects can be created. And yet believers remained believers, because by that point, it's not about the photos anymore. It's about the faith.
Exactly. And that's what leads to the trial. Mumler isn't charged because someone proves his photos are fake. He's charged because authorities believe he's exploiting people financially. And that distinction matters because the court isn't ruling on whether ghosts exist. They're ruling on whether Mumler intentionally deceived people, and that's a much harder thing to prove.
Yeah, and the trial itself is fascinating. They have experts come in to testify, they have photographers explaining their techniques, and then even P.T. Barnum shows up, which almost feels symbolic. You guys know who P.T. Barnum is, I hope. I'm not going to explain that one. And Barnum demonstrates how similar effects can be created artificially. But here's the problem. Just because something can be faked doesn't mean that Mumler did actually fake it in a way that the court can prove. Photography was still too new at the time, and the legal system just didn't have that vocabulary yet.
So Mumler is acquitted, not vindicated, but not convicted. And socially, that's almost worse, because now people can choose whether the version they want to believe, and many choose belief.
Yeah. And then we get to a photograph that cements Mumler's legacy forever. Mary Todd Lincoln. Yeah, that very same. She was a woman shattered by loss. She sat for a portrait. Actually, let me backtrack. You guys all know who Mary Todd Lincoln is, right? She was married to Honest Abe. I felt like I need to explain that because I know
the
we do have a couple of kids listening and maybe they haven't gotten that far in their history lessons.
We might have international listeners too.
Maybe. I doubt it. But maybe. But anyway, yeah. Mary Todd Lincoln was married to Abraham Lincoln, who
yes.
was the, what number president? I don't even know.
1860, during the Civil War.
Yeah, president. During the Civil War. He was a wonderful president. Anyway, so Mary Todd Lincoln sat down, and she was devastated after Abraham died. So she sits down for a portrait using a pseudonym. And in case you guys don't know what that is, it's a fake name. And behind her appears Abraham Lincoln in the photo. His hands were resting on her shoulders. I can't talk. I'm playing a Christian. And the symbolism was overwhelming. It was protective. It was comforting. His presence was just unbelievable. And whether this image was fabricated or not, it worked. And it became the most famous spirit photograph in history.
And what complicates this further is that the image of Lincoln appears to be reused from an early photography.
Photograph.
You're
stumbling over this.
Some same pose, same angle, which strongly suggests manipulation. But here's the part I always come back to. Mary Todd Lincoln believed it, and that mattered more than any technical explanation, because she wasn't looking for proof. She was looking for connection.
I'm going to go off the script for a second. Didn't she have seances
yeah,
in the White House to
did.
Try to contact Abraham Lincoln? And I don't know the result of those.
I think it was her son. They would try and contact it in the White House.
But yeah, she definitely believed in the other
yes.
side. And hey, if it put her mind at ease, more power to her, whatever. That's her business. But anyway, so when people ask, was William H. Mumler a fraud? I personally always hesitate because, yeah, technically, probably. But emotionally or culturally, he was something else entirely. He held up a mirror to a grieving nation and gave them what they wanted to see. And that's uncomfortable because it forces us to ask how different we really are now.
Exactly. Because today we are still analyzing photos for anomalies. We still want proof. We still want signs. Mumler didn't invent that instinct. He just gave it a form. And whether you believe his photos were real, fake, or something in between, they tell us more about us than they do about ghosts.
And honestly, that might be the most haunting part of it all. I just have to say, I'm always looking for signs from the other side. I had seen a medium actually right after my mother passed away, and I was a skeptic, but she told me things that nobody ever could have known. And then she had told me that we were going to start finding dimes around. And sure enough, we find dimes everywhere. Sometimes they manifest out of nowhere, and I'm not even exaggerating. It happened to me and Chris, a month ago at Disney? I was sitting at a table, And there was not a dime there. And then all of a sudden there was a dime there on the floor. It came out of nowhere. And I've had a few manifest literally out of nowhere. I know they weren't there before. So I don't know. The signs are there. I don't know. Anyway, go on. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
So we hope you find this as interesting as we did. And if you have any topics that you would like us to cover on the podcast, and let us know.
You said that weird. It's a podcast. I love you.
And, yeah, you should go check out the falafels if you're ever in Boston.
Yeah, falafels actually aren't that good. But go Google the photographs, because there's a bunch of his photographs on Google, including the Abraham Lincoln one. And they're really interesting.
And with that, we'll see you later, alligator.
In a wild crocodile.
We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies. Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details. Save 15%.